Every season, the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park offers up a new play or two that hasn't been seen at any other theater anywhere else in America, at least not yet. Our award-winning regional theater in Mount Adams has an impressive record of new works, 70 so far, and now it's ready to add number 71 with this week's world premiere of Safe House by Keith Joseph Adkins. He's with me in the WVXU studio this evening to talk about this new play. Welcome, Keith.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Maybe we should start with your own story, since it's also kind of a starting point for the story that you tell in Safe House. You're a Cincinnati native, right?
I am born and raised in Cincinnati, both of my parents. I believe three out of my four grandparents. And of course, the play is based on my grandmother's family's history in the area. And we've actually been in the area since the 1780s.
That's pretty amazing. You went to high school here?
I went to Princeton High School, yes, and also undergrad at Wright State University up in Fairborn.
You don't live in the area anymore?
No, I live in New York City. I live in Harlem, USA.
Okay, well, great to have you back in town, and thanks. I'm sure you're pleased to be back and working on this production.
Yes.
So you've got family history that goes back a long way, and you were intrigued as you dug into that more about the fact that they were free people of color.
Yes.
I think that's a concept that a lot of people who may feel like they know something about American history aren't fully aware of. I certainly wasn't. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what that means and how it played out in your family in particular.
Right. Yeah. So like I said, my grandmother's family had been here since the 1780s. I didn't know a lot about my grandmother's family's history. I knew she mentioned like her grandmother was born in Wilmington and grew up in Xenia, Ohio. I knew things like that, but I didn't know how that was connected to slavery or not. And I do remember asking her, as I think a junior high schooler or high schooler, who in her family had been slaves, and she actually casually said there weren't any slaves in her history. And I thought she was mistaken, because we all sort of learned that slavery is a huge component to the Black experience in this country. So actually, as I started doing genealogy, I just kept tracking her family back, and I found them in the 1860s, 1840s, 1820s, 1780s, 1720s.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was just really fascinated by that. And then, of course, my next task was to find out how they got free.
Yeah.
I was like, how is that possible?
Right.
And so I assumed that they had just been manumitted by owners, because that often happened. Like, I think Thomas Jefferson, you know, manumitted some of his slaves and they migrated to Ohio, things like that. But what I discovered in my grandmother's history, they were actually descendants of white indentured women and men of color, predominantly men of African descent. And those children, because their mothers were considered free despite her class, whether she was in servitude or not, those children were also born free. And then they often married each other. And then you have six and eight generations of free people of color.
Now, the term free does not quite connote what we think of as free today. They had a lot of limitations on them.
Oh, yeah, lots of limitations.
Talk a little bit about what some of those might have been.
Well, I know in Kentucky in particular, northern Kentucky, there was a point when they were able to bear arms, and then something happened. I don't know exactly because I'm not a complete historian, but that right was taken away from them. They were allowed to read. They were allowed some level of literacy at some point. But in the 1840s, which is around the time my play takes place, that right was also taken away. They were also just sort of unofficially at the mercy of kindness, because they could walk out of their homes or outside of their town and be kidnapped into slavery and no one would even know. So it just every day was sort of a risk for them, and which is why I think they stayed in tight-knit communities.
They were able to own land. Is that true?
Yes, they were able to own land. Yeah. In fact, my family owned land in Kentucky and in Ohio before the 1850s.
And they could also lose their freedom if they didn't pay their taxes or
exactly.
had fines and things like that.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So they lived a much more tenuous existence than what we think of as freedom, I guess.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I think at one point, too, like, as far as taxing, I know that mostly white men were taxed just because it was a very patriarchal world at that time. White women were not. However, within the free Black community, both men and women were taxed.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So you learned all this about many generations back of your family. How did you then turn that into Safe House? What did you take from your family history to create the story that you're telling here?
Well, I was really fascinated. At one point in the family history in the 1850s, one part of my grandmother's family, they were actually living in Harrison County, Kentucky, which is, I guess, Cynthiana is like the big hub there. And it was a family of shoemakers. The father was a shoemaker. I think four out of his six sons were shoemakers. And I thought, hell, that's interesting. So their livelihood is to make shoes for the larger white community. And so what does that mean for them? Like, how interesting that is. So I wanted to kind of explore that. But also, I had another side of my grandmother's family, the same free side. There was a woman who lived in Falmouth, Kentucky, and she was actually, I think her mom was white, but she had to prove that somehow. And so she finally proved it, and she actually purchased land in Falmouth, several lots of land, built the first African Methodist Episcopal Church in Falmouth, but also was an agent on the Underground Railroad. And so I thought, oh, wow, how can I kind of combine that with the shoemakers? And so I decided to combine them and tell a story.
Yeah. So why don't you give us a real quick sketch then of what the story of the play is, at least the setup of it?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. It's about a free family of color. They're shoemakers by trade. And there are two brothers in the household. Both of them are adults, and they are basically been nurtured by their aunt. And one brother is insistent about having an incredible shoe business for his family and for the community. And the other brother isn't so interested in that. And what happens is that, well, I don't want to give too much away, but
no.
Yeah, but something happens where it sort of challenges their loyalty to each other and their loyalty to the larger enslaved Black community.
So this is a specific story about people in a particular moment in history. They aren't really your relatives. They're sort of inspired by your relatives.
Inspired by my relatives,
you might say. But having read the script, I also found it to be sort of a more universal exploration of family dynamics. There's this sort of rivalry, sibling rivalry, a little bit of a romantic rivalry between the two brothers.
Yes.
And were you thinking about that as you wrote, or were you really just trying to tell their story and it played out that, you know, it's something that many people can relate to?
Yeah, I think with my writing in particular, I always sort of bring, with that unconsciously or consciously, I bring whatever's happening in my world, my present world, and what I know and what I've observed. It just sort of finds itself in my stories. And so in this story in particular, I had two older brothers. I had uncles. I had grandfather, I had brothers. And so I've always been interested in the sibling rivalry. So much drama to tap into. Mm-hmm. You know, what a perfect place to sort of play out really universal themes and family themes.
Your show had a little bit of a preview here, actually, for local audiences when it had a reading at the Cincinnati Playhouse back in February.
Yes.
Now, when that happened, you didn't know that it was going to be part of this next season.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
No.
So how did that decision move from the reading to the production?
Well, I literally got a call from Blake Robeson, the artistic director of Cincinnati Playhouse, and he said, "Hey, Keith, this is Blake." I was like, "Hey, Blake." I was like, "Did something happen? Like, what, did I leave something there?" And he basically said that we want to produce your play. We think it's a perfect fit for this area, and let's do it.
So it's got a lot of great local connections in it, a number of places where Cincinnati gets mentioned, at least, as being sort of a grand place that's a little far away, but
these
folks don't know about, but know that there's a lot of things going on there.
Right. Place to be.
Yeah, so it's a great—well, the place to be coming up soon is the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, the world premiere of Keith's new play called Safe House is already underway this weekend at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. It opens later this week on Thursday and will be on stage through November the 15th. For more information about the show, follow the link that you'll find at WVXU.org. My guest this evening has been playwright and Cincinnati native Keith Joseph Adkins. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Keith.
Pleasure.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.